Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. My name is Rita Schulte, sitting in today for David Inge. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. The technical director this morning is Henry Frain. Now, my guest this morning is Larry Keller, owner of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign, and we're here to talk about birds and birding and all kinds of things related to feathers, as long as they're still flying. Our phone number is 333-9455. Or if you're calling from outside the 217 area code, it's 800-222-9455. So, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
It's great fun to have you here. Birds are like the coolest thing. A friend of mine took me birding one time, and it's like now a disease. Can't let them go. And my first thought is like, who is out there in the flyway right now? We were talking a little bit of, that this is like a peak migration time. Lots of people, or lots of birds flying back and forth.
Correct. Yeah, we've got fall migration coming through right now, and what that basically is you have your neotropicals, you have waterfowl, you have shorebirds. Quite a bit of the population of birds is actually moving through the North American continent, heading to the southern half of that continent. Also, a lot of birds are going into the Caribbean, Central America, and even as far as South America.
Mm,
so
wow.
Right now is one of the peak times. Then it reverses again approximately April, May of next, mm-hmm. of next year when those birds are migrating back up north to do their nesting. But right now they're heading south for the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Now, this morning we were moving some stuff around. We had a deck painted. I noticed that there were a lot of very small birds that from a distance could have looked like sparrows, and they were marching through the grass like little soldiers. And you're telling me they might be warblers.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of different species like that, especially if you're if you look up in the trees and bushes right now. Even today, what a mm-hmm. great day to be out if you're birding right now. Mm-hmm. The weather's perfect. It's clear out. Nighttime is clear, so a lot of that migration occurs during nighttime. So there's a lot of birds coming through right now. Even this morning, I noticed a lot of warblers are in the mm-hmm. trees right now. So that's one of the big ones moving through. Real tough to identify, though.
Mm-hmm.
Warblers during the fall, it's probably one of the most challenging birds to actually identify what species you're looking at. They don't have their pretty breeding plumage on. So pretty dull, pretty nondescript on a lot of these different species. And plus, what also makes it very difficult this time of year, of course, the foliage is still very thick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to get a real good look at a lot of those birds, especially when they're at the top of the treetops.
Yeah. It was odd this morning because it did look like there was – like the grass was like moving. It looked like a
right.
giant caterpillar going through the grass.
Right.
And when you looked really close, you could see there was all these little tiny birds and they were just like moving through. And Martha was saying yesterday that hummingbirds are going through.
Yes. Yeah,
and everybody's got a hummingbird question.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hummingbirds, our fall migration starts about mid-August. The males will come through first. So all of a sudden, you'll see a big influx of hummingbirds at your feeders in your yard or at your flower garden. Feisty little guys.
Mm-hmm.
If they find a feeder they like, they will. It seems to protect it and chase anybody else off. And the males will come through. Right now, the males pretty much have passed. There might be a few still coming through, but for the most part, the males have passed through East Central Illinois anyway. And we're starting to see a lot of the adult females coming through, and also the immatures, the ones that were born this mm-hmm. last spring.
Well, they are crazy because we sat and watched my brother-in-law's feeders, and there was one bird. I had to have been exhausting himself just making sure nobody else got to that feeder.
Right, and they will do that. And there's a way to combat that. If you want more hummingbirds in your yard, the best way to do it is do multiple feeding stations. However, when you're at the one feeding station, you should not be able to see the other feeder. That way they can't protect both of them. So if you put, say, for example, a feeder in your backyard mm-hmm. and one in your front yard, there's no way that hummingbird's going to be able to protect both feeders at the same time.
Okay.
So actually you will increase the number of hummingbirds that you will see in your yard.
So the little rascal won't open up a front yard front while he's working on the backyard
exactly.
feeder.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's
so
a good idea.
That's a great way to bring them in. And then another question we get constantly this time of year is, you know, when do I take my feeder down?
Mm-hmm.
The instinct to migrate is the strongest single instinct besides reproduction that birds have. He will move or she will move out of the area on their own. So those hummingbirds will migrate whether you've got a food source up or not. They're not going to stay here. So if you go pretty much about a week to 10 days, you've seen no hummingbirds, you're pretty well safe to go ahead and take your mm-hmm. feeders down. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that can happen any time from the first couple weeks of October up through Halloween. Just depends on what our weather does. Years past, I've had customers and clients that have had hummingbirds up to almost Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
So it does happen. And by having that food source out a lot of times too, you might actually be helping that hummingbird along because they're giving them a high energy boost, especially first thing in the morning after we've had a frost even. So a lot of those flowers are dead and a lot of that food source is gone for them. So you're actually aiding a little bit as far as the migration pattern.
So if we put out the extra bird feeders or keep the feeder out, we're not encouraging them to stick around. They will make their way.
No, not at all. Yeah, they will move on when they want to.
Okay.
Yep. And usually what you'll see is you'll see that now we're getting into fall, so we'll start seeing these cold fronts coming through. And we get a monster cold front come out of the north. Those birds that are here usually will move ahead of that and get and stay in front of that front and move out. But also birds that are north of us that are still up there will be pushed into our area. So there's a constant flow going on and on during the fall.
And is there – everybody's always talking about squirrel-proofing things, and we don't want to get on that subject because that could go forever. But we have a cat. Now, we keep her inside, and this animal has never had an A game, so I don't think she could catch anything. But if I wanted to put a bird feeder up so that the neighborhood cats, if I wanted a hummingbird feeder, is there a good way to do that? Are hummingbirds too quick for a cat? Are they relatively cat-proof?
No, cats will grab a hummingbird. There's no question. The best thing is, and this is true with any feeder, if you've got cats in the area, you want those feeders to be in the open, no bushes or shrubs underneath that feeder. And the more open the area, the more sight line the birds are going to have as far as the predation goes. So they're going to be able to see that ground predation coming. You don't want to hide the – you don't want to put platform feeders out or ground feeders out anywhere near bushes and shrubs. You want it in the wide open area, at least 8 feet away from anything. And then also still you want to have it in a general vicinity of trees and bushes where the birds do have cover as far as from aerial predators such as hawks.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but cats should be kept inside. They should not be outside.
Yeah, no, kitty doesn't get outside.
There's a rough estimate, and it's a conservative estimate. They estimate that feral and cats outdoors kill approximately 500 million plus birds a year on songbirds. So the numbers are staggering that they actually kill. And the thing, and we hear a lot of times, well, my cat grabbed the bird, but he let it go.
No.
But yeah, the bacteria levels that cats have in their paws and their teeth are so high that even just a tiny scratch or a little puncture on that bird, that is a death sentence for that bird. So that bird will die from that.
Yeah. Because I had noticed that there are three new patrollers in our neighborhood, new cats. And as a cat lover, I think, well, that's very cool. But it is a risk for birds.
Right. Yeah. And we get asked a lot, what do we do? We've got a cat that shows up. You can contact animal control. They can do live trapping and then take it to the Humane Society and try to place it with a home that's going to keep it inside. That's the best way to do it.
Safer for the cat and safer for the
birds.
Correct.
Yeah. Any time a cat is outdoors like that, it's not a safe environment for the cat. Mortality rates are extremely high for them then. They're exposed to just an endless stream of dangers. Then on the other hand, then they're also providing a huge problem for the wildlife and the native animals also.
Yeah, because it was interesting watching them. One of them is quite the hopper, and I'm thinking, wow, how much of a challenge is he going to be to the songbirds that are all over the place right now? I want to remind everybody that our phone number is 333-9455. And if you're out of our area code, you can call us toll free at 800-222-9455. We hope you'll give us a call this morning. Talk to Larry Keller, owner of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign, and tell us who you're seeing in your backyard. What birds are you catching out the window as you go about your day? Who's visiting your bird feeders? One of the birds that I thought, you know, I'm not entirely sure what they're thinking, but we've got cardinals now nesting in ewes in front of the house, and which is what made me think of the new neighborhood cats. But they just don't seem to be intimidated by much of anything.
Right. Yeah. They're very, you can say, social. They're very used to human activity. They tend to nest very close to houses. Any types of thick shrubs or bushes, evergreens even, you'll see cardinals nesting in. It's not uncommon to have them right outside your window. It's a very common occurrence as far as cardinals go. And usually they'll nest twice during the summertime, whether they've had success or failure on the first nest.
Oh, so, you know, we're moving into a change of season right now. And if I wanted to be a good neighbor to the bird population, what should I be putting out? How should I be setting it up so that they'll find it, so that they'll have it to themselves for the most part, to keep them away from predators as best as I can?
Right. This time of year is definitely the time of year when birds are establishing what we call feeding patterns. You've got birds that are moving in territories, out of territories, but they're establishing their territories now going into wintertime. Mm-hmm. And by establishing feeding patterns, they know where food sources are in that given territory. So when you start feeding right now, you've got it established going into wintertime, because people, a common mistake they'll do is say late December, all of a sudden we've got a big snowstorm coming. People put bird seed out, and that seed might sit out there for four or five, 6 days with no activity, mm-hmm. because the birds simply don't understand that it's there for them. And when that inclement weather's here, that's not the time for them to be searching for new foods. They've got these patterns established where they know that food source is at. Mm-hmm. So having the feeders out now, making sure everything is established going in for the next couple weeks is the best time to be doing that.
Okay. And if I wanted to, are there particular birds that I would be attracting this time of year?
You're going to get your generals that you see here year-round, your cardinals, your blue jays, your woodpeckers, chickadees, titmice, nuthatches. We will start seeing here in October some of the migrants coming in that are real common feeder birds, such as the juncos will be showing mm-hmm. up in mass numbers. The different sparrow species will be showing up also. The red-breasted nuthatches will start migrating back down, mm-hmm. so we'll start seeing them for the winter. So there's quite a few mm-hmm. different ones that will start showing up that we don't see during the spring mm-hmm. and summertime. But like I say, you definitely want to have those feeders up and going here real soon, so mm-hmm. those patterns are established.
There's one that I see coming into – we live in a condominium, so we have this large common area in the back. And occasionally we'll see a collection of very small, very plump little birds with green kind of an olive green breast and a dark green back.
Right. Those are probably the – kinglets
okay.
that are migrating through. Right. And you'll see them in the fall and the spring. Usually late September and then through October, you'll see a lot of kinglets coming mm-hmm. through.
And they look very much like there's the bird that's always on the Christmas card. It's got the white, gray-white breast and
right,
the little
the chickadee.
Black chickadee.
Yeah, the chickadee.
They almost look like chickadees
yeah.
When you just first
Right, when you
see
first
them.
Take a glance at them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, unfortunately, most of Champaign-Urbana does not have chickadees. Mm-hmm. But if you live out along the river systems, such as Danville, mm-hmm. Mahomet, Monticello, those areas, of course, they're loaded with chickadees mm-hmm. along the river system. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's strictly their habitat is rivers only. And you won't find them... So that if you're looking for if you actually want to take some kids, if you want to teach kids how to look for birds, you say, okay, let's look for a chickadee because it's pretty specific.
Right, very specific, very common in those areas. If you go to some of the state parks, for example, you will definitely see them around, and it's real easy to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very common. They're very active. They're usually very social birds, so you can get mm-hmm. fairly close to them okay. to identify. So yeah, it's very mm-hmm. very good one to look for.
Yeah, because I know we when the girl our girls were little, they used to get a big charge out of chickadees. You would crawl up the sides of the trees as they were flying through, because there
right.
was just a little creek not far from where the house was.
Yep, exactly. And then, of course, one of the other winter type feeding situations that you can do that's very common is the suet feeding. And that's going to attract all your woodpecker species. Your chickadees, your titmice, nuthatches will feed on that very mm-hmm. well. A year-round resident is a Carolina wren, so they will feed on the suet. And that's a very high-energy food. It supplies a lot of protein and fat for the birds, which mm-hmm. also helps generate body heat. So
yeah.
that's very, very successful type of feeding during the wintertime.
Now, if somebody wanted to get into bird feeding a little bit and they hadn't done it before, what would your advice be? If you wanted to put a suet block out, it's very warm outside.
Right.
So this would probably not be the best time? Is there a...
Well, commercially, there are suet cakes that are developed for summertime feeding.
Okay.
They won't melt. They won't turn rancid. They're very hard dough-type texture, mm-hmm. so there's not a problem with those particular ones at all. Mm-hmm. Usually, though, during the summertime, of course, we've got insects.
Yeah.
So all those insect eaters are feeding primarily on their main source of food. They mm-hmm. will use the suets a little bit, but, boy, during the fall and wintertime, that's when you really mm-hmm. see the suet cakes going.
And are suet cakes the kind of thing that I still have to watch squirrels?
Yes. Yeah, there is a suet cake on the market that is a mixture with hot pepper. And it is very effective of keeping the squirrels off of that. So that is one I highly recommend.
Okay.
And then another problem with suet feeding is a lot of times you will attract very large hordes of starlings.
Oh,
and
yeah.
nobody wants to see that.
Uh-huh.
And there are also feeders designed to where the woodpeckers can get to them, but the starlings cannot.
Oh, okay.
So that's something also to keep in mind.
Yeah, because we came out the one morning last fall. We have a tree in front of the front door. Not a good place for a tree, as it turns out. And it was looked like it was covered with leaves. They had all fallen. Well, what they were covered with was birds.
Right, right.
Like, wow, that's amazing that there were so many of them. And the minute the sun came up, bam, they were gone.
Yeah, and then another interesting one during the fall time and then even into winter, and one that gets a lot of attention is the hawk migration coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everybody who's doing feeding at some point in time during the winter time especially, they will have coopers or sharp-shinned hawks pay a visit to the yard, and the predation occurs on birds at their feeder. And another interesting one that is coming through right now are the broadwings. And they form very large groups, and usually they're flying pretty high up in a circular pattern. So if you're not looking up, you're not going to see them.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they are here, they're passing through, and they form what we call kettles, which is a group of hawks. And you might see kettles of 100, 200, 300 birds at a time coming over. And it's really neat to see. And usually the nice, warm, clear days, very high up, but they're circling, and it's very, very visible. So if you look up, especially in the month of September, you will see those kettles. Last week I caught one coming through Savoy. It was probably about 200 birds in it. So
and
pretty interesting
so
to
if
see.
So if you're on the ground and you're looking up,
yes,
they would be big birds.
They're in a large circular pattern.
Okay. Okay. Our technical director, Henry Frain, suggests that we see if we can. We've been having a little difficulty with the phone, but we think we've got a caller on line number one. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Good
great.
Morning.
Good morning.
There's been a problem with the signal, and for a while there I couldn't hear you just now. I gather for a while they were just on HD.
Uh-oh.
Talking to Henry, the signal, the radio that you could hear in my house just started to buzz. So they're having a few technical difficulties. Maybe I'll disappear again. Who knows? Anyway, my question. My mom lives in an apartment in town, and on the second floor. And we've tried a couple of window bird feeders for her. She has difficulty getting the bird to notice that the seed is there. The squirrels discover it pretty quickly.
Right.
And they climb up the brick to the second story. She got disgusted last winter and gave up because the squirrel was eating all the food. I presume that what we should do is coat the seed with some, or toss the seed with some cayenne pepper to discourage the squirrels and that they'll learn not to bother.
Right.
But these are small feeders, obviously, so they'll be, so that they can stick to the glass with those suction cups. There's no way to hang the feeder other than that way. Do you have any suggestions?
Does she have a deck out there at all?
No.
Okay. Well, the problem, is she getting any bird activity at all?
Well, we haven't tried again this season.
Okay. Okay. What I would do then is I would start off with a mixture of seed, because when you're starting a window feeder like that, the main priority is just to get some sort of activity there. Once you get one bird to show up, you're going to get more birds. You're going to get more species to show up, because then the flocking behavior kicks in and birds will see other birds feeding there and come to it. So what I would do is start with a mixture. You want to, birds find food by visual, so you have to increase the seed visibility of that particular feeder. That means fill the feeder completely. If you've got a little a sill there or anything you can add more seed to, go ahead and put seed there also. You want to make it very, very visible. And by doing that, you're going to attract somebody's attention. And then once you do that and you start getting birds there, then you can do that with the pepper additive. Sometimes that works, sometimes it does not with squirrels. Or you can switch over to safflower seed, and usually squirrels won't eat safflower seed, but your house finches will, your cardinals love it, and if anything falls onto the ground, the doves will pick it up.
Yeah, I've been very happy with safflower seed. We have a feeder at a family farm in Ohio, and for a time we were getting things like cowbirds, and I switched to safflower seed, and it took the birds a little while to realize that it was interesting, and now all kinds of things will come to that feeder. We've had rose-breasted grosbeak and various, I think we had three different woodpeckers, and the birds were all very happy anyway.
Yeah. But start with the mixture on a window feeder like that. Just get some activity, and then you can do the adjustments to get who you want and who you don't, and keep away who you don't want from there.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
This is me to another question that I had about birds and windows. The other week we noticed Sunday morning when we were in the building here, and we have large windows here at the studios at WILL, and it goes onto a courtyard. And there were probably five or six smallish birds that had clearly flown into the window. And this is not a rare activity, but that many was pretty amazing
right.
to see all at one time.
Right.
And I don't know what kind of bird they might have been.
Well, and see, that's one of the problems during migration period, mm-hmm. spring and fall. You've got a lot of birds that are coming in and out of an area where they may have never been before, and you have a lot more window strikes during the month of May mm-hmm. and also during the month of September. And to prevent that, there are a lot of different things on the market that you can sticker and decal-wise you can put on the windows. It's going to add depth that there's a window there. It's going to use some of them use UV light. Some of them are just colored.
Mm-hmm.
But they're usually static stickers that stick on inside or outside the window. And we've seen over the years that that can reduce window strikes up to about 90%. Mm-hmm. So it does work. So that's one of the things you can do if you've got areas mm-hmm. where the windows are high strike windows.
So if you're trying to establish a bird feeder on a window, a window feeder, that's
right.
something is either built into the feeder or you need to do.
No, window feeders, there's a rule of thumb. If you put a feeder outside of a window 3 feet or closer, then you're not going to have kill strikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's too close for the birds to gather any speed to come in. A window is going to add depth, or a window feeder is going to add depth to that window.
Oh, okay.
So the birds are not going to run into the window just because of that.
Okay, so they'll be seeing that first.
Right, yeah. Window feeders are actually fairly safe. You're not going to have the strikes. Like we talked earlier about the aerial predation from hawks,
mm-hmm.
that's when you'll see a lot of birds bouncing off the window. But like I say, they're so close to the window, they're not generating a speed where it's going to harm them.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay. So one of the things that I did notice is they do seem to know there are a couple of red tails in our neighborhood that have established nesting somewhere. We can't see where
right.
they have set up housekeeping,
right.
but it's pretty clear that they have.
Right.
And the female, ordinarily, she'd be perfectly happy with a rabbit. But you know immediately if she's out hunting because it looks like every bird in the area tucks up to the trunk of a tree.
Right. Yeah. Everybody disappears. That's
one
of the things.
It gets very quiet.
Exactly. If you see there's no activity at the feeders that there typically is during that time of day, I can guarantee there's a predator somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And fortunately or unfortunately for the rabbits, they haven't figured that out yet.
Right.
But, you know, for the folks in the area that are trying to grow, you know, vegetables and other flowers, very they're not all that disturbed.
Yeah. The hawk's a good thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a good thing. We got another caller on. Oh, here's a question from Henry, actually. Where do hummingbirds go when they migrate? And then we have a caller on the next line.
The hummingbird migration will take them during the summertime. They're up as far as Canada. That migration will take them down to the Gulf states, and they will actually cross the Gulf of Mexico into the Yucatan Peninsula. And
mm-hmm.
that's where they winter is the Yucatan Peninsula.
Okay.
And then they will turn around, make that migration back up starting in March of next year.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be here mid-April, first part of May in central Illinois, and then keep going further north also.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's quite a journey for those little guys. It's hard to imagine that such
yeah.
a small bird traveling across the Gulf of Mexico all the way down to the Yucatan Peninsula. If you actually look at a map, it's an amazing
journey.
It's a long
journey. Way.
Right. And the people that live along the Gulf states, when they put a hummingbird feeder up, they'll have 40, 50, 60, even 100 hummingbirds at a time fighting to get to that nectar
mm-hmm.
because it's a huge filling station for them basically
mm-hmm.
for that last big jump. So they're trying to establish or trying to gain as much energy as they can to make that jump.
So if you live in the right place, you'd be seeing monarch butterflies moving and hummingbirds
right,
right about
right.
not exactly the same time, but within
actually,
reasonable frame time.
Yeah, the monarch migration through central Illinois actually is in September
mm-hmm.
also.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon to see, to look out one day and see a tree completely loaded with thousands of monarchs,
mm-hmm.
If you're fortunate enough to catch that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next day they're gone. So,
right.
yeah, the migration does occur pretty much about the same time as far as those two species here in Illinois anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do have a caller on line number one from Urbana. Hello. Okay. Are you there?
I'm here.
Line number one?
I think I'm line number one.
Okay. We can't
Good
quite
morning.
Hear you.
There we go. Play with the radio.
Nope, we're fine.
No, we're fine.
Okay. Thinking about bird food visibility in the bird feeder, I experimented with at home, well, actually at a farm in Ohio, with a big tubular feeder, and I was doing this just for my entertainment, but it occurs to me that it does make the feeder more visible. I put a scoop of black sunflower seed in and a scoop of safflower, then black sunflower, then safflower. So it ended up looking like a parfait.
Right.
And it looked really cool, and it was fun to watch it change its dimensions as the birds
were feeding on it. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we hadn't had feed out for several weeks, so it probably was one of the ways that the birds realized that there was food there. But it was fun and entertaining for me, too, to watch.
Yep, exactly.
Because it goes down oddly.
Right.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
There's a odd little question bouncing around the back of my head, and I lost it completely, and I'm not sure what it was, but it had to do with the hummingbirds again. Oh, I do know. There was someone, we were just in a group of people talking, who had was trying to concoct their own hummingbird.
The nectar.
Mm-hmm. And had heard someplace that you should be very careful to make sure if you use a commercial product that you're stirring this up with, that you don't use something with a non-sugar sweetener.
Right, yeah. The only thing that is safe is sucrose or dextrose, mm-hmm. Straight sugars.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial hummingbird powder that you can buy is usually a blend of dextrose and sucrose together. Mm-hmm. The stuff you can make at home, of course, is sucrose, regular table sugar. You want to boil the water, dissolve that sugar in there. And usually the ratio, what you want to stay with, is 4 parts water, 1 part sugar. Mm-hmm. You can store extra nectar that you have in the refrigerator, but once it starts to turn cloudy, you want to get rid of that. And the big key factor is when you're feeding hummingbirds is it is kind of maintenance involved. There's a lot of maintenance involved with it. You want to make sure that those feeders are kept clean every 3 or 4 days. You need to change mm-hmm. the nectar, throw out the old nectar, wash the feeder completely, rinse it out, then put fresh nectar in. You're dealing with a sugar, so you've got mold, you've got mm-hmm. bacteria, you've got fungus growing on those feeder surfaces that are feeding on that sugar. And those funguses and bacteria can be transmitted to the hummingbird, and they are fatal.
Oh.
So people who are putting out hummingbird feeders that leave the nectar out there for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, you're actually doing a lot more harm than good by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's one thing that we caution people. You know, we get a lot of clients that walk in and they say, hey, I want to start hummingbird feeding. The first thing that we tell them, okay, now there is a lot of work involved with this, more so than, say, a finch feeder, for example. So you've got to make sure you do it correctly because, like I say, you don't want to do more harm than good. They're a great bird. They're very mm-hmm. easy to attract, especially during that fall migration. And it's one of everybody's favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be careful with it. There's no question.
Now, is there a way, do they respond to certain kinds of plants like butterflies will?
Right. Yeah. Any high nectar producing plant, trumpet shaped flowers are the best.
Mm-hmm.
One of the easiest ones, of course, is salvia. Red salvia works
yeah.
great. It's very easy to grow. You can put it in pots. You can put it in beds. You can put it just about anywhere. It's a very high nectar base. They will use those very well.
Mm-hmm.
Petunias aren't real good as far as nectar. They will use them a little bit. Impatiens, they'll use a little. Cardinal flower is a real good one. Pineapple sage is a great one that blooms for that fall
mm-hmm.
migration. A huge nectar base in there, so they use that very well. So there's a large, large number of flowers out there that you can use to attract. And one of the mistakes that people will do a lot of times, they'll take that hummingbird feeder, they'll put that right in their flower bed because they think that's where the hummingbirds are going to be. But the color of your hummingbird feeder is going to be lost in the color
mm-hmm.
of all the flowers. So you want to put your hummingbird feeder someplace close up on your deck near a window that's very easy to see, someplace where there's no other color, because when the hummingbird is flying around, he sees that red on
mm-hmm.
the hummingbird feeder. He's going to come investigate that, and then bang, you've got him. He's going
yeah.
to stay there. So,
if you know yourself well enough to realize that you're probably not going to be vigilant about that feeder, salvia
right.
would be a nice.
Right, yeah. Putting the flowers mm-hmm. out and putting a lot of them out, and you will get plenty of hummingbirds, mm-hmm. especially during the migration, and they will stick around your yard.
You don't want them right up on top of your house. You want them a little away so
no,
they
– it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. There's actually, when we were talking about window feeders, there are several different window feeders for hummingbirds that you can use.
Okay.
And they will come right up to the window. They have no problem
mm-hmm.
doing that. And it's kind of interesting. You'll have the hummingbird feeder up 1 year at the window. The next spring when that hummingbird comes back, he will actually come to that window. Most people see him at the window before they ever get their hummingbird feeder back
out. So he's looking for the diner,
exactly.
and he's waiting.
He knows it was there. So
oh,
it's
wow.
pretty interesting.
Well, they're pretty clever.
Right. Yeah, well, memory is very important for birds
mm-hmm.
and their survival. So, for example, birds had success nesting in your cardinal or certain species of migrators that come through have success in your yard or in
mm-hmm.
your territory 1 year. Well, they're going to come back to that. There's no question. Say, for example, purple martins, when you purple martin house
mm-hmm.
up. They've had success there. The next year, those adults and probably those sub-adults are going to come back to that same colony.
Okay.
And then that's how your colony builds and builds and builds.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with house wrens. Same thing with bluebirds. Any of those migratories, when they've had success, they're going to come back to that territory again
mm-hmm.
because it is successful for them.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the adult bird, the only purpose on earth is to
make
reproduce.
Little birds. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Eat, sleep, and make little birds. So is that why – of course, sparrows don't really migrate, do they?
Some species do, yes. Mm-hmm. Your typical house sparrow, no. They're mm-hmm. year-round resident. You're going to have them no matter what. We've got white throats, white crown sparrows. They move through in the spring and fall, okay. So that's a migratory one.
And what's the one with the little red patch, the little triangle patch on its head?
You've got common red poles. That's mm-hmm. another one. That is a northern migrant, so they're up north of Illinois. During the summertime, wintertime, we might get them come through. You never know. It varies from year to year. It's not a real common occurrence in Illinois and central Illinois, but from year to year, we might have a population eruption mm-hmm. where there's a huge population of them and the food is not sustaining up north, so they will migrate down through here.
Mm, okay.
So that's possible.
Because we had noticed that there was one we're assuming it's one little male sparrow. It could be a number of them or might be a descendant. Will come through and put a nest in the most outrageous place. They seem to like nesting right over the top of the downspout hole in the gutter.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the spots, you would say, you know, not necessarily good urban planning on his part because the minute there's rain, down it all goes.
Yeah.
And if we don't get to it first, and there's all sorts of, you know, reasons to... We try pushing him out, put a cap on the top, and he'll just go nuts.
All right. Yeah, house sparrows are very opportunistic. They're very aggressive nesters. Mm-hmm. That's one of the problems that we have with a lot of our native species is that there is nest competition with house sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
And house sparrows are so aggressive, and people don't realize that. So, for example, if you're trying to attract bluebirds, a house sparrow male, he will kill an adult bluebird if he catches that adult bluebird in the box.
Oh.
I've seen where the bluebirds have had a nest before, the female's in there, the house sparrow come in, he would kill the female on the nest and start building his nest on top of her body and the other nest. They are extremely aggressive.
And that smaller bird can take out a bluebird. Oh, yes. Of course, bluebirds aren't that much, significantly bigger.
Right, not much of a difference in size, but it's the aggression that they have. And,
wow.
And they're very powerful in their bill strikes. So there's no question that's one of the big problems that we have with native species.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes chickadees, titmice, nuthatches, all your woodpecker species, mm-hmm. Bluebirds, tree swallows. They have a major competition problem with a non-native invasive species, which is the house sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
And house sparrows... of course, they cause a lot of problems with people's homes because they're mm-hmm. nesting in drier vents.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a fire hazard with them. And they're very opportunistic. Anything that they think that they can put a nest into, they're going to do it. There's no question.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And for reasons I have not figured out, the little tuxedo cat has not decided that the sparrow in the flower pot is as tasty as the robin. Maybe he's afraid of them too. I don't know. But they're charming and delightful and fun to watch, kind of on the same level as squirrels, but equally noxious if they are where they don't need to be.
Right, exactly. And, of course, with migration, too, we've got shorebirds, the plovers, are coming mm-hmm. through in September. So that's a really unique one. When the fields start to get harvested and maybe there's a small flooded area out in the fields, you'll see a lot of shorebirds, a lot of flocks flying, really neat aerial displays mm-hmm. that they do in their large groups. So that's another one people can look out for. Some of our waterfowl are moving through. So if you're near the lakes or streams mm-hmm. or rivers, you'll start to see a lot of different colorations as far as different waterfowl mm-hmm. starting to move through this area at this time of year mm-hmm. also.
Okay.
So that's one thing to keep in mind.
I want to remind everybody that we're speaking this morning with Larry Keller, owner of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. Our phone number, if you have a question about birds or want some help identifying a bird that you may have seen, some interesting places to look for birds, locally it's 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. There was, when we drive around, one of the most fun things to do is to drive around in the countryside this time of year because when harvest comes, everything gets rattled and shaken and it moves around. And one of the things that we see very often now, that for a while there, it disturbs me a little bit when I don't see hawks because they're like, you know, canaries in the coal mine, so to speak.
Right.
They're like the hawk
barometer
outside.
Of the environment. Yep, exactly.
There are like three different varieties, I'm assuming, that we will frequently see along the highways.
Right.
There are some relatively small little guys. And mind you, we're like knocking by them at about 55 miles
exactly.
an hour, so it's hard to really peg them down. And then there's the really big And I'm assuming they're red tails, but I'm not sure because they're usually sitting four square on top of a highway sign.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the small guys that you'll see along the interstates and any roadway, really, is the American kestrel. Okay. And they're actually a falcon is what they classify as. And very, very common, very pretty little hawk, mm-hmm. or a falcon, I should say. And usually hunting mice and large insects is what they're doing. And so those manicured cut grass areas along the interstates, mm-hmm. of course, that applies with any hawk, but that's what's attracting them to those areas.
Okay.
Then the larger guys that you're seeing, most of those are red-tailed hawks. But you will see Broadwings, Swainsons, Red Shoulders, all those mm-hmm. other ones will be along the highways also. A lot of great perching areas so they can overlook mm-hmm. areas that are very accessible for them to hunt in very easily. So that's why you see them along the interstates. Mm-hmm. It's very obvious. Their populations are increasing. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. They're starting to come into town and nesting in town, mm-hmm. not only just feeding in town, but we see a lot of nesting now occurring. And it's pretty interesting. It's a whole other avenue 15, 20 years ago you just didn't see.
Yeah.
And so we're starting to see those numbers increase. And that's one of the questions we get a lot of times. Well, what's this bird population or this bird population? Well, we see a lot of different sectors of the bird population where the bird numbers are either staying stable or they're increasing. But then also we see other ones that are decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
And is that because the population is actually decreasing or their migration patterns changed? It's probably a culmination of everything. So
okay.
You see a lot of that. And I've noticed, say, over the last 15 years, you see migration patterns changing also. And I think that's very common. If you go back to some of the old field guides from Peterson,
mm-hmm.
where they had the migration maps, and if you look at it now, it's like, boy, no, that range has expanded
mm-hmm.
Half of the country, actually. So you'll see a lot of the different changes on that as far as what birds you're seeing, how many, when, why there's a variation from year to year.
Mm-hmm. And as our human population drifts in different directions, do we see more birds that ordinarily might not have, say, flown over the desert? Maybe now there's human population there providing, water hazards on golf courses, water features on buildings and gardens
yeah.
and things.
Encroachment from humans, it has negatives and it has positives, mm-hmm. is what we've noticed. For example, if you look at any neighborhood now that is built, of course, there has to be water put in.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got different species such as your herons, your egrets, and of course your waterfowl, geese especially,
mm-hmm.
you're seeing those populations are actually stabilizing and increasing
mm-hmm.
in a lot of those areas, and that's simply because we've provided the habitat for them.
Mm-hmm.
But now also by building that neighborhood, you might be taking out grasslands, you might be taking out forested areas that are actually hurting some species. So there's a lot of give and take in both directions. So some are benefiting, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see a lot of different species, they become very adaptive. And they learn how to deal with human activity and around mm-hmm. human activity. In the middle of Champaign, you've got great horned owls nesting in different areas because
mm-hmm.
you've got large established tree areas. You have a lot of food available for them. So there's a lot of rabbits, a lot of squirrels. And mm-hmm. so it's a very safe area for them, and they sustain life very well.
Mm-hmm. That was the bird. We were at an event yesterday, and we were talking to the kids were walking around, and one mom was saying, she can't get enough of owls since Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, well, if I actually wanted to look at one or see one, what should I look for?
Right. Owl species, we have quite a few different species in Illinois. Typically, if you're along the river systems, you're mm-hmm. going to see the big three, and that is your screech owls, which are the very small guys.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see the barred owls, and that's B-A-R-R-E-D, not barn, but barred.
Mm-hmm.
They're a river valley owl that you'll see. And then, of course, the great horned owl, which mm-hmm. is the big guy. He's the biggest one that we're going to have around here. So those are very common. Usually, you want to be out at dusk. Right before
okay.
the last light is gone, that's when you're going to see the owls moving around. A lot of times you're going to hear them at that time of,
mm-hmm.
of day also. Now, the key is fall and winter are the best times for owling. Is because they're very vocal. They're establishing territories, and they're creating pair bonds for breeding.
Mm-hmm.
So the owls are very vocal during that time period. So, for example, October through January is when you'll see a lot more activity of owls moving in and out of territories, looking for mates and trying to establish
mm-hmm.
territories for nesting. And the vocalizations really increase.
Mm-hmm.
So at nighttime or right at dusk, you'll see, if you're in those wooded areas, you'll definitely notice there's a lot of activity.
Mm-hmm.
Our great horned owls, for example, which are really unique birds because they're the first birds lay eggs in Illinois. They'll lay them actually in January.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it takes a long time for their young to grow and establish and basically know how to hunt for mm-hmm. themselves. So they've got that whole time from February, March when they leave the nest actually till the next winter so they can survive. Mm-hmm. So they're one of the more unique ones. And if you're in an area that's forested, it's not uncommon. You're mm-hmm. going to have owls. And even in town nowadays, mm-hmm. Screech owl populations are very high in the middle of cities.
Really?
People don't realize it because they're a small little guy. They don't mm-hmm. move around during the daytime, but they're very
chatty.
Active. Yeah, they can be. Yeah, mm-hmm. they do their winning type of sound, but they feed on a lot of mice and they feed on a lot of insects also.
Mm-hmm. Because I remember my favorite owl experience was a great aunt of my husband's was staying with us in Indiana when we were living there, and there was a tree just right outside the one-bedroom window, and it's quite high up, so it's not like it could be a person in the tree. But she turned the light off, and there was just enough light coming from the street that it hit a pair of eyes in the tree.
Right.
And she let out a howl and must have scared the bird, because the bird let out a howl, and then everybody was screaming. And it was it was one of those moments that you couldn't have written if you tried.
Right.
The bird won. He was not leaving. He was like, on the tree, I'm not.
Right.
You get away from the window.
Yeah.
And it was a good-sized bird. I'm assuming it was a great horned owl because
right.
probably Indiana just right across the border.
Right, yeah, and great horns are very, very common. I mean, mm-hmm. you will see them. And they're unique birds because they are such incredible hunters and killers. Mm-hmm. They can take down just about anything imaginable as far as food goes. They're one of the few species that feed on skunks.
So bless their hearts.
That's exactly. So that's a benefit as far as that mm-hmm. goes. But they can kill and they will attack just about anything, mm-hmm. Even birds that are larger than them. They will hit a goose. They will hit a swan. There's different things that you wouldn't think that would be possible for them to accomplish. But their pounds per square inch on their talons,
is
unbelievable. Yeah, and they have a really unique mechanism that when they hear, for example, a rabbit scream when they grab it, they actually it's innate. Their talons will clinch even tighter, mm-hmm. so it's actually going to assure a kill for them and definitely a meal for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very unique birds.
I remember my grandfather and uncles had farms up in Will County, and he had taught us to go when we were going through the barns and other places where the birds would possibly roost. We would look for the pellets. And we were always told in no uncertain terms that if we found these little pellets on the ground, we were not to mess around in the hayloft or
right.
anything else, because the one thing he did not want was for the owl to leave.
Exactly, yeah, because of the number of rodents that the owl was consuming.
And to some extent also small snakes.
Yes.
Which, because he raised hogs, pigs are not big snake fans. And while they will deal with it, it will freak them out. And at birthing season, it's just not what you want to have
right.
dealing.
And
they
right.
will. They would. Bam, they'd be on a snake. And that was an interesting thing to see.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Because they even, and it didn't take much of an owl to do it. I mean, they could be little bitty guys and they'd be on it. But so from the time we were really young, it was like, oh, look in here.
Yeah,
this
found owl pellets, you know, mm-hmm. they're owls. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so we were saying, well, you know, you just go around through the trees and look for the pellets on the ground.
Right. And a lot of classrooms, a lot of grade schools will use the owl mm-hmm. pellets and dissect them because you will actually obtain the whole skeleton structure uh-huh. of that mouse or that
yeah.
vole that they consumed. And, of course, all the furs in there and everything. So
mm-hmm.
it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we used to have a biology teacher who saw it as a quick and dirty way to get as many little skeletons as she could.
Exactly.
Because she could go through and she just, you know, we could
right.
all. So
yep.
there we all were chopping up owl pellets to find the little
yeah,
bits and pieces.
Yeah, you could piece back the whole body completely.
Yeah,
yeah the
it was
skeleton.
A pretty amazing mm-hmm. bird, the way it, you know, sort of eats and then spits out the bones and fur.
Right.
There's still time to call. Our number is 333-9455 or toll free 800-222-9455. I'm assuming that the large raptors, the owls and the hawks and things like that, these are not birds that necessarily you would chase, but you wouldn't do anything to invite them.
Well, yeah,
I mean, deliberately.
The invite is going to be what type of food source is there mm-hmm. for them, whether it's there or not. That's and they're going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
The accipiters, like the Cooper's hawks or the sharp-shinned hawks, by you simply putting out a bird feeder, that's going to invite smaller birds. And those birds, mm-hmm. the accipiters, catch birds on wing. That's what they do, and that's how they feed. And so by having that food source out for your songbirds, you're going to be attracting those hawks to your yard. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like it. Some people don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of calls about that. as far as what do we do as far as with the hawks and the problem that they're causing. And the hawks are going to be there no matter what. So it's not like you're doing something different as far as changing that environment. But what you can do is if you think it's a major problem, you can stop feeding the birds for approximately a week to 10 days. You're taking that food source away from that particular environment, so that hawk will usually move on to a different environment is what they'll do.
But it's a relatively easy bird to watch for. If you're starting with kids, it's nice and big and you can see it.
Exactly.
And it stands still.
Yeah, and like I say, their numbers really are starting to increase, so you see them just about anywhere.
Yeah. Is Illinois – we were driving around and we saw a large cluster of really good-sized blackbirds that were not crows that I took to be vultures. They were on a carcass of some sort. Do we have a lot of vultures?
Yeah, turkey vultures, yeah, very common. You'll see them just about anywhere. Play, of course, a very vital role as far as what they do, as far as in cleaning up the environment. They're unique birds. They don't have to eat every day. But when they do eat, they usually gorge themselves to the point where they are above a flight weight and they can't leave the ground. So then, of course, they become susceptible to predation on the ground, such as fox and coyotes. But they've got their own defense mechanism. They've got a
very – Well, they smell bad.
Well, they smell bad, and then they also – they have a projectile vomit of acid. So it sounds gross, but that is what they do, and it's an amazing thing. I mean, it can temporarily blind a coyote, for example.
Oh, wow.
But that's the mechanism they have built in to protect themselves.
This is a creature that was just built for a 10-year-old kid.
Yes,
exactly. If I was a 10-year-old kid and I was making up an animal, it would be a vulture.
Yeah, you would like something gross. They're not clean. They're involved with environments that are very grotesque usually. Mm-hmm. They vomit. Yeah, you can't get anything better than
that. Oh no, if you're a kid, that vultures rock.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's great. Oh, yum, right before lunch. So if I as we, head into the last few minutes, if I'm going to be looking out my window, who should I look for?
Right now, if you've got a good pair of binoculars and willing to go outside and take a look up in the trees, you've got all your warblers coming through. We'll start seeing the sparrow species showing up at the feeders, like the white throats, white crowns. We'll start seeing them soon. Here in a few weeks, we'll start seeing the juncos showing up at the feeders. And then we get into November, we should have the red-breasted nuthatches hopefully coming down. Maybe evening grosbeaks, you never know. Pine siskins, the red poles we're talking about, they might show up. It's hard to say. But one that's real active and just about anywhere you live, you can see Carolina wrens, which are real nice little guys. They're here year-round, very active birds. They'll feed on suet. They'll feed on sunflower hearts or peanut pieces, which is a real good food to put out for them. Hmm. Of course, you've got your standbys like your cardinals, your blue jays, your woodpeckers. So there's quite a few different ones. A real unique one coming through right now are the sapsuckers. So people will see them on the trunks of the trees drilling different series of holes in the trees.
And what do they look like?
They're a larger woodpecker. They're black and white. They're kind of dirty looking on the front of the bird, maybe a yellowish stain looking.
Oh, okay.
Pretty good sized bird, though, blue jay size or so. Mm-hmm. But they will be stuck to the trunk of the tree. That's where you're going to see them. And if you have a tree that has a series of horizontal holes, and drilled in, it looked like somebody actually shot it with a machine gun. That's a sapsucker. And if you keep your eyes open, he'll revisit that site several times during the daytime. One, to get the insects that are coming to the sap, and then also the sap itself.
Now, there's an old myth about woodpeckers that they will peck on houses. Is that true?
During what we'll see is two different reasons why they're hitting a house. One is during springtime when they are courting each other. You'll see drumming is what they do, so that's attracting a mate.
Okay.
And that drumming can include your chimney. It could be the side of your car. It can be just about anything imaginable. I've heard it all. During the rest of the time of the year, though, if you have a woodpecker hitting the side of your house, you probably have an insect problem.
Okay.
Now, whether that's carpenter ants or anything worse, it's hard to say. But that's usually what you're seeing in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's and when I'm talking about hitting the side of a house, that's when it also looks like somebody took a machine gun upside down the house. There's holes everywhere. Now, if you got just a single hole that they're making it large, they're pulling insulation out of the wall, that's usually they're going to be nesting there is what they're trying to do. And that's usually in the springtime only also. So that's another thing that you'd have to deal with, a different type of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they will hit just about anything imaginable.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's kind of like the spider in front of the house that thought she was going to eat the car.
Yeah.
That was ambition. and so we covered some of the foods we want to put out, and the idea that you can mix a little cayenne pepper with your bird seed and your suet feeder.
Yeah, and that's not a foolproof, but sometimes it does work.
Yeah, because you could find a squirrel that likes chili,
exactly.
And you know, then you're in trouble.
Exactly.
But then try eggplant. Maybe they don't like eggplant. Good ideas for where to put and how to handle hummingbird feeders and plants for hummingbirds to be thinking about for next year to attract them back and forth. And keep your cats inside.
Definitely.
Better for the cat, better for the birds.
Right.
And is there any other words of wisdom about things going on right now?
One thing that you can get a lot of attention with, especially in the wintertime when we get cold, is heated bird baths. And I highly recommend them.
Okay.
The birds will use them. Nice, clear, sunny days, they'll actually bathe in them. It's not going to hurt the bird at all, but they will use those. And you'll get a ton. You'll actually get more activity at a bird bath during the wintertime than you will during the summertime.
Is it because
water's
ordinarily
premium.
It's
yep,
yeah, premium?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And they need water just like everything else.
Everything else. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
Yeah, and we put a pan of water out during the wintertime because they were all kind of hanging around. And like, man, it's cold out there.
Right.
I was afraid for a while there that they were going to freeze themselves in that pan of water because it was so cold and they were on it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. they're attracted to it like crazy. Mm-hmm. And if you got any of those birds that typically will migrate but are hanging around, such as robins, we have a lot of robins that will stick around in the wintertime. You'll see them like crazy on a bird bath during the wintertime.
Yeah. Why did they do that?
As far as staying here?
Yeah.
They've got a food source. If they've got a food source, they'll stick around. Yep.
Okay.
And their winter ranges have just expanded. That's all.
Well, thank you for coming and talking to us today.
Thank you.
And we had a great time. We learned a lot about birds. I hope you enjoyed hearing comments from our guest today, Larry Keller, owner of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. My name is Rita Schulte, and I have been sitting in for David Inge this afternoon. I'd like to remind you that our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Our technical director this morning is Henry Frain.